Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Forbidden Technique Podcast with your boys, Christian and Silas. Is the fucking big one this week. We got UFC 300. So many good fights on this card. We're not even going to talk about Apex card from the weekend.
It was fine. That's our take on it.
It was actually pretty bad. Main event was good. It was a good fight, but whatever. Doesn't matter. No one's thinking about that stuff. We've got one of the most bonkers stacked cards ever. A card that is totally fucked over the upcoming Brazil pay-per-view by putting by far their two biggest Brazilian stars on it. And this card is also just like, it shows the problem with doing the kind of show that we do, because it's like 1 week we're barely getting an hour out of like four consecutive events because everything has just been saved for this absolute fucking behemoth. That to talk about every meaningful fight that deserves to be talked about in some degree of depth would be like a 6 hour fucking podcast. The first fight on the entire card is two former champions
that are actually in for a fun fight too. So like that fight could be starting the night off with one of the fights of the night if Cody's chin holds up.
Yeah, might also suck.
It could suck. Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, top two fights. Honestly, some of the less interesting fights on the card, even though I'm sure they'll be good. I guess we'll just get straight on into it and probably not have time to kind of get into as much detail on some of these as we'd like to, because I want to say something about pretty much every fight on this card. So main event, we got Alex Pereira kind of unifying the lineage of the light heavyweight title with Jamal Hill. It was the absolute fucking bonkers hot potato that belt has been since John Jones vacated the division. But this fight's kind of, it all sort of kind of comes full circle, you know? And so my gut pick is obviously that I want to pick Alex Pereira by a vicious KO. But Jamal Hill has a lot of the makings of a pretty good matchup against Pereira, because he's huge and he is really aggressive and comes forward, extends every exchange, pushes people up against the cage, really bullies people in the clinch. You know, if he's getting into prolonged clinch exchanges with Alex Pereira, he's actually going to use that to like be landing good knees to the body. He hits fucking hard, and you know, Alex Pereira, he's got a little bit of Edson Barboza in him. You know, he's one of these guys that, particularly as an MMA fighter, you really just don't want to let him get set up at a range where he can get his tricks going against you, where you can be more creative and more dangerous. I think Jamal Hill can hang at that range just because he's a southpaw with a jab who has pretty good kicks. But, you know, is one of the first things that you have to ask in every Alex Pereira fight is, are they going to be able to deal with getting low kicked in a really weird, annoying way that really fucking hurts?
And is probably very reliable against Hill because of his heavily noted footwork errors.
Yeah, my main answer to that is, well, Alex Pereira already beat Jan Blachowicz, so the rest of light heavyweight is basically free money as long as he doesn't get wrestle-fucked, which hasn't really happened to him, I guess, like, apart from it in like one round against Israel Adesanya. Jamal Hill, you know, he's an MMA fighter. He can do a double leg. He's actually pretty good on top when people let him get there.
I think Hill's going to hunt for the takedown, probably. I think he should, and I think that he is a good enough planner to know when he just should do something. I could be overestimating him, but I don't think I am. One thing I noted when watching like some tape for this fight is that Hill really just likes to impersonate whoever beat his opponent best before him. Like, you look at the Glover Teixeira fight, and he just is doing a really awkward Alexander Gustafsson performance. He tries the triple uppercut at one point. It just looks fucking horrible because mechanically he's kind of all over the place. His feet are constantly like moving because he like tripods and just throws a bunch of punches and just keeps wobbling over like a tripod missing one of the stands. He has a very awkward balance when he's throwing his punches, but his actual like mechanics with his upper body are normally okay. Like he'll throw a good hook that bends his elbow enough and lands with the right part of his hand, and he'll throw a 1-2 that's if you just see from the upper body up, like, it's pretty good. But then you pan down, you see that, like, his feet are completely crossed. Or see that they're for some reason, like, 4 feet apart. So I think that things like that are going to come into play a lot against Pereira, whose feet are going to be consistently in position and also ready to throw a big hook counter or even just, like, a nice uppercut. Because Hill's quite uppercuttable, especially the way he likes to enter the clinch. And Pereira has been kind of just winning a lot of his fights off of chipping people away and then them getting scared of being chipped away to not being able to fight anymore. So they just get themselves killed before they're fully chipped away.
Yeah, that's the thing about Pereira. He is really fucking annoying at range, but he's also absolutely terrifying to storm the pocket against. So, like you say, people are either so terrified of getting counter left hooked that they just get, like, kicked up from range the whole time because they don't want to press in, or they get sick of getting kicked up from range and try to press in and then get left hooked. And Jamal Hill being a guy who is so willing to get hit in an exchange and just be there to throw back and, you know, is fine with eating real clean shots if it means that he can just, like, stay in the exchange and get in a position to hit the other guy way harder. But, you know, he got fucking dinged in the very same exchange that he knocked out Johnny Walker. It's just like, Johnny Walker doesn't actually hit that hard and also has a pretty bad chin, so Jamal Hill just got kind of wobbled and Johnny Walker went down like a PS1 game animation.
And I've just seen Jamal Hill take huge shots with his feet horribly out of position to where I don't really think it's going to be a checkmate of the first time he fights a counterpuncher that can throw a nice counter while his feet are in bad position, he'll lose. He's already had that test like 4 times and his chin just passes each time.
I can't pick that to reliably work for him in a matchup like this. If it does, then he is in position to make Pereira's life an absolute misery because he's actually a pretty sharp pressure fighter when he has people just like backing up into the cage. And despite all of his, like, defensive and technical liabilities, he is a very offensively sharp MMA kickboxer.
And he's going to go for the right things. He's going to try and counter the left hook with the right straight. He's going to use his jab to try and bait out things to attack. He's probably going to low kick himself, or low kick as well, to try and make sure that he isn't just completely stranded at range.
Yeah, and we've seen Alex Pereira in the fights that he's lost convincingly, particularly as a kickboxer, it was people who actually had the goods to be able to consistently bully him, like deny his counter opportunities while also not letting him set up to just pick them off repeatedly. That's just pretty fucking hard to do. You got to be like Alexei Kinchenko to pull that shit off. I mean, Israel was having a lot more success actually standing his ground in exchanges and really trying to push Pereira back in their second MMA fight, unlike the first one where he really just like fought like modern day Israel Adesanya and let Pereira get his whole thing going. As fucking scary as it is, trying to really go at Pereira is a much more consistent way to win against him than staying away because you're scared of getting knocked out. I don't think Jamal Hill is going to fight like that. I just do think it's probably going to get him knocked out. He's so hittable when he's pressuring and he just accepts it as part of the plan.
Well, that's the thing for both guys. They're both quite hittable and pressuring. Like, Pereira's been hurt bad while having his opponent to the fence twice, both against Adesanya, but twice in the UFC. At the end of the first round in their first MMA fight, and then as he gets knocked out in their second MMA fight. So something like that I could actually see Hill getting something done with, just getting his ass beaten against the cage and trying to just sell out on huge shots. Because, you know, it was a right straight, but it just as easily could have been a nice left hook counter, and Jamal Hill's got pretty quick hands for that. It could have been shooting a double leg as dude's fucking blowing his load trying to kill you against the fence. It could just be grabbing onto him really tight and just like pulling into guard and then trying to stand up because Pereira's I have seen people compliment his grappling for how inexperienced he is as a grappler. I don't particularly agree. He looks like kind of shitty on the ground from all the times we've gotten to see him grapple. He's just strong, and he's got big hands, so he gets a good grip on your arm and just, you know, tries to get himself out of the situation. But he doesn't actually have very deep takedown defense, and Jamal Hill has proven that he has the ability to go a really hard, high-paced five-round fight, even when it's not going his way the majority of the time. Because, you know, the Glover Teixeira fight, he gets hit quite a lot, and he gets he gets pushed. He has to really try his best to be able to pull ahead in that fight. And something about Pereira in his most recent performance is I thought he looked kind of like shit against Jiří Procházka. Procházka was having all the success in the world coming forward. He just kind of overplayed his hand at a certain point. And
he looked kind of like shit against Jan Blachowicz as well.
He did. He's just generally looked kind of bad at light heavyweight or since the second Adesanya fight, I think. He's still good enough to where he's going to beat a lot of people. Like, he can still beat Jiří Procházka, who's maybe the best light heavyweight in the world. But he could just run into a wall where he's now fighting a guy that has an even better chin than most of the people he's been able to get a finish off against in the UFC. And the guy's strong as shit and probably has the most ability to top game him out of anyone he's fought so far. Because he, you know, Pereira got put down by Procházka. Procházka's a fucking terrible takedown artist. He's insistent.
Got topped by Jan Blachowicz.
Jan Blachowicz, Adesanya, which is probably the most damning of those. Andreas Mikalidis was holding him down until he got reset by the round starting.
Yeah, these are just all fights that he wins, though.
They are fights that he wins. In the same way it's dangerous to, like, take too much from someone in a loss, it's also dangerous to act like someone didn't also kind of look like shit in some of their wins. Like, I thought Pereira's eyes just didn't look very ready for someone to step in on him. He looked not worried, but he just looked like he didn't have much composure in the Procházka fight. And that against Jamal Hill being as dialed in as he's probably going to be, I think it could get him hurt pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean, Pereira is just actually pretty susceptible to blitzes.
He's very susceptible to blitzes, and he doesn't like whenever someone shows long kicks to cover distance. He doesn't like whenever someone is just willing to clinch with him off of a punch. Like, the punch and clutch tactics work great against him.
Jamal Hill is fucking violent in the clinch.
Yeah, he has, like, really good knees in the body. He has a strange thing where most of his fights are just him doing a shitty impersonation of the best person that beat his opponent. But he also, the parts of his game that are uniquely his are his incredibly violent knees to the body from really any position. He can knee you to the body on the ground. He can knee you to the body as you're standing up. He can knee you to the body from an over-under or a double collar tie, whatever the fuck position. He can find a nice time knee, and he's got a fucking sick check hook. And check hook versus check hook sounds like it would favor Pereira, but I don't necessarily know.
I don't know about in the open stance though, because it's not going to be one of those where they're trading the same left hook, and it's that 50-50 exchange of who gets that cleaner, quicker connection. It's more who gets check hooked while they're overthrowing their straight,
which it more likely to happen a lot to Hill, but I think if Hill lands his shot, he's more likely to put out Pereira. I think
you're picking Jamal Hill then?
I want to, but I think I'm going to pick Pereira.
Because I am going to pick Pereira by second, third round KO, but now that we've talked about it a little bit, I'm like, there is a lot of room for Jamal Hill to win this fight.
If Jamal Hill fights well, I think it's similar to the Strickland thing, where Strickland, he could have beaten Pereira if he just didn't fight like a fucking idiot.
And Jamal Hill is a lot more dangerous than Sean Strickland.
He's a lot more dangerous, so he can play that game and still maybe come out with a win, and he's very heavy, and he's shown that he's willing to grapple people even that are good grapplers. You know, he hung in there with Glover Teixeira on top and on bottom.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he even really got put in a clean control position in that fight and was like stuffing takedowns into getting on top of Glover Teixeira and beating the fuck out of him. Really well-placed ground and pound shots.
And Pereira, every single time he's been put on the ground, there has been just free opportunities to blast him with big shots if you're not scared of letting him get up. But so many people are just scared to let him get up that they'll give him a free stand-up. Because the only thing that'll actually stop him and make him defend is if you just start blasting him in the chin. Anytime someone has shown ground and pound against Pereira, he addresses that before he addresses the like his position. And I think that would be a really good thing for Jamal Hill.
He just doesn't actually show that much urgency in those situations because he's like, I'm just not going to take any risks while this is going on. I'm just going to stay calm and just chill and wait for the fight to be going my way again, which it always does eventually, you know?
Yeah, the amount of power he has lets him be more patient than his skill set actually affords him, I think. Because he's not someone that's going to be able to shut Jamal Hill out of the fight, I don't think, at any point, unless he just beats him out of the fight.
Yeah, I think if he's actually able to scare Jamal Hill out of pursuing the pocket, then, you know, if Jamal Hill just concedes a long-range kicking battle, I do think he's going to compete, but mostly get torched. Like I say, I do think his best chances of winning on the feet are just not resetting and just staying in Pereira's face and, yeah, maybe putting himself in worse positions to potentially get knocked the fuck out, but at a much greater payoff in a strategic sense.
I think to a large degree people have been underestimating Jamal Hill's actual like skill set in practice because he has a lot of technical flaws. But, you know, an example to kind of show you why it's silly to underestimate him so much for having like bad footing or, you know, him looking kind of goofy whenever he's exchanging with someone that he's easily beating. If you're showing low lights of someone, you're going to see them look like shit. If you show Pereira getting knocked out by Adesanya, you'd be like, why the fuck did he throw himself so horribly out of position with that hook to get punched? What an idiot. Why has he got such bad footwork? You know, it goes both ways if you're going to be needlessly critical of someone that's still actively winning while making numerous technical errors. Like Jamal Hill's, he still pays attention to where his opponent's throwing. He's not just wading into offense getting cracked. He has bad defense because he has kind of mechanical issues, but his actual eyes are on the game. He's watching to make sure that big shots don't get him, and he normally sees shots coming. That's why he's able to take so many of them.
Yeah, he just doesn't have much of a defensive system, and he clearly believes in his chin.
And Pereira, he has a defensive system. It's not very deep, but it's enough that it's gotten him this far without...
Yeah, and it's enough to consistently keep him at a range where he can run his game.
Exactly. Hill, I think, just doesn't feel the need to have that type of game because he's just able to compete with anyone in their A game for the most part. Like, if you're a good striker, he can strike with you. If you're a good grappler, he's strong enough at defending it to where he can still strike with you or fuck you up if you get tired. I think Hill might be Pereira's worst matchup at 205, and that's a reason that I'm still going to pick Pereira, but I want to pick Hill.
Okay, so just for fun, should we call our shot? I'm going to say Pereira knocks Jamal Hill out with a right head kick that Jamal Hill sees and tries to lean back out of the way of, but still gets chinned.
Okay, that is a really good one. I think Jamal Hill is going to jab and then throw a really big right hook. And Pereira is going to be against the fence thinking that he can just throw a left hook and then he'll get beaten to it. And it'll like kind of clip in his chin. And then it'll like swing over and fall like a noodle. I decided to pick Jamal Hill last second because you picked Pereira.
Yeah, I feel like one of us should pick Jamal Hill. I just had to go with my gut on this one.
Yeah, my gut wants to pick Jamal Hill, but I'm just going to go with it on this one. Then for maybe the least exciting fight, but not the least important, Weili Zhang versus Zhao Nanyan.
So obviously Weili Zhang is a huge favorite because she's looked like an absolute fucking hoss and just like threw Yoani and Jacek around absolutely no problem and was hitting like silly moves for style points against Carla Esparza, who absolutely mopped the fucking floor with Zhao Nanyan. I'm assuming that is most people's immediate read on this fight, and that is totally fair. I still want to give Zhao Nianyan credit in this matchup, though, because Weili Zhang is also hittable as fuck when she is coming forward. It's normally just that people are not hitting her back with enough authority at this division that it's able to dissuade her from doing her thing. Zhao Nianyan is a pretty decent boxer, like, mechanically, and she has good footwork. And it's not like Yan is traditionally a huge knockout puncher, which it seems like that's kind of what she's got to get done. But, you know, if someone's just, like, coming at her with reckless abandon because, like, they're just getting annoyed by how flighty she is, she showed against Jessica Andrade, she can just, like, time a real good shot. Like, anyone can get knocked out if they just get hit by a good shot while their feet are horribly out of position and they're chasing. Weili Zhang, certainly not above that kind of thing. You know, she also got, like, dinged pretty badly by Amanda Lemos in a fight that she was otherwise dominating because Amanda Lemos just one time actually stood her ground and threw a decent one too. I'm still going to pick Weili Zhang by khabibing, though.
I am going to pick Weili Zhang by khabibing as well. But something that I've noticed that it could be a real problem for Zhang is that the way that she sets up takedowns on strikers versus grapplers is actually kind of different. She wants to bait strikers into positions that, like, a wrestler would see and know, oh yeah, fucking easy takedown. And then she baits wrestlers into striking positions where a striker would be like, oh, I'm going to fucking wipe this guy out. And then she does the opposite. So if she gets you into the position where you're going to get knocked out by a punch, like if she baits a wrestler into an off striking exchange, she's like, okay, now I take him down. And then if she's fighting a striker who she's thinking that, oh, I got to get her into a position that makes her super easy to take down, I'm going to punch her. And it's the most frustrating fucking thing I've ever seen. Because her timing is amazing, she just has it opposite sometimes. She'll get, like, the most obvious, oh, just throw a fucking right hook. You could look at the opportunity to throw a right hook and then decide in the moment after seeing the reaction still be able to land it. Don't even have to time it. You just fucking see, oh, an opening. Bam! And she won't fucking take it. She'll be like, oh, I've got a single leg.
I mean, at the same time, I guess there's something to be said for, like, a good position is a good position, you know.
That is the underlying thing that is very impressive about it, is that to have that issue, you have to be good enough to reliably put people into fucking horrible positions with either their footing or their upper body posture. So it's something that it tends to make strikers get taken down more easily, because if they're expecting a really good penetration step, they're not going to really... They're going to be willing to throw, like, a big step knee because they think he's going to counter you. But instead she's like, oh, I was just trying to bait a single, dipshit. So I think that Zhang could end up in a situation where she gets sprawled on because of her tendency to kind of intentionally zig when their opponent is predicting a zag.
Yeah, only thing about that is, have you ever seen Zhao Nianyan do a sprawl?
I've seen her be really fast and know what a sprawl is. And Weili Zhang is... She has great takedowns, but her takedown selection is just very awkward because she'll sell out for, like, a Hulk takedown.
She just loves to hit crazy shit.
She likes to hit crazy shit. But, like, the crazy shit, I feel like, gives Yan so much more room to deny or do something about, or at least capitalize on Zhang exhausting herself by doing it, because Yan has a good gas tank. That's an issue Zhang could run into if she can't actually create enough control positions and get offense off from those positions. There's every reason in the world to think that Yan probably just gets her ass beaten, at least just based off of how their previous matchups have gone. But I don't know, 2021 was a long time ago. Carla Esparza, she'll do that to someone. You know, I'm sure...
Yeah, I mean, Yan didn't get wiped out on the ground by Mackenzie Dern,
who is much better at actually being someone on the ground. And she made it to a decision, too. So she lasted 3 rounds not getting submitted by someone that is gonna submit you if you're really bad at jiu-jitsu.
But also, you can just survive against if you're good enough at jiu-jitsu to just chill and not get submitted and lose the round.
Because Zhang, like, wrestle-fucked Carla Esparza but she also like Muay Thai bullied her and was three times the size of her. This is gonna like a wrestling advantage can overcome a size disadvantage, but only in the context of you not also being much smaller than the person that is better at wrestling than you. I think it's really just when things happen is important, because Jan's not the same fighter that got like crucifix TKO'd.
We're still both going to pick Weili Zhang, right?
Yes, very confidently.
Yep.
I just think it's bullshit that people are acting like Jan has no chance, because there was also people acting like Zhang had no chance against Andrade, and that was bullshit. And Zhang's inconsistent as fuck. She has some fights where she looks like one of the best skill-for-skill fighters to ever be in the division in multiple different facets. Like, she looks like an amazing grappler in the second Ioana fight, but then in the second Rose fight, she looks like kind of amateurish when grappling. It's just very awkward. She and yes, like the order.
And of course, she got absolutely smoked in the first Rose.
Yeah, she looked like fucking. She looked fine, and then just died in like 30 seconds in the first fight. And then she's had other fights where she looked amazing on the feet and like a terrible grappler. She's had fights where she looks like a great grappler and a terrible striker. So it's just, if you're predicting her fights confidently by method, you're nuts.
One thing she's never really had is any degree of boxing defense.
No. All of her fights, even her best performances, she gets dinged on the chin if someone actually insists upon throwing hands.
And, like, Jan will do that. Like, at least one time, Weili Zhang's just going to, like, roll up to Jan, step into a big switch kick, and just get dinged with a real crisp right straight. That is one thing I'm picking to happen, like, 100%, regardless of who wins.
Yeah, and more likely than sprawling, I could see Zhang just trying a straight line blitz to get an angle to pick up a single and, like, rotate around, and then Jan just, like, limp legs and pushes that off. Or just, like, simply pivots, because, like, a pivot would work just as well.
All right, so anyway, probably the actually best fight on the card. Justin Gaethje is fighting fucking Max Holloway, and I gotta let you lead on this one, Christian, because you have been publicly saying for several years that if Max Holloway fought Justin Gaethje, he'd absolutely fucking torch him.
And I do agree with that. My issue that I'm running into is they have finally booked the fight when their trajectories have made me think that it's now about 50-50. For the last, like, 5 years, or basically since Gaethje's been in the UFC in 2017, I've thought, wow, if Max Holloway fought that guy, he would beat the shit out of him. He hits the body well. He's fucking tough as nails. He can eat the hardest shots of anyone I've ever watched fight. And he's really fast and has crazy cardio. And he's also a fucking great grappler, so if he wants to just show that threat, he can get that going. Yeah, he has infinite amount of upside if he fights him leading up until Gaethje became kind of like the Ferguson style, like from the Ferguson fight, where he's a lot more patient. People say it came before that, but he just knocked out Don Cerrone because he was being nice to him. Like, he knocked him out in a polite way where he didn't just go up and beat the shit out of him. I think that Gaethje doesn't really have that in him anymore to just go up and bully someone and fuck them up. I think he really just has gotten adjusted to being a outfighter. But the one thing that is still, like, whispering in my ear telling me Max is going to beat the shit out of him is the look in Gaethje's eyes and the change in his posture every single fucking time someone has ever hit him in the body. He takes a body shot pretty well. Like, I've seen him eat hard body shots and not fall to them and, like, keep being dangerous in exchanges. But they visibly wear on
him. It's a huge part of how Eddie Alvarez handed Justin Gaethje. Yeah,
and also it was a factor in the Dustin fight. Dustin was showing body shots and getting Gaethje's hands to drop a little bit lower as the fight went on.
Dustin, not even a big body puncher.
Not a big body puncher. He just saw how open it was because Gaethje loves to put up a high guard and lift his elbows up.
It's just like, so Eddie Alvarez.
Like, if you're a good boxer, you're going to see that opportunity. Michael Chandler landed a good right straight on Gaethje's body more than once. Fucking Charles Oliveira was landing really good knees to the body. Didn't really go as much for punches, but he went for good offensive body. Kicks from Fiziev. Fiziev, if none of you have rewatched that fight, go back and watch it. Fiziev has a lot of fucking success with getting body kicks off and landing nice punches. anyone that fights Gaethje is increasing their chances of winning dramatically by attacking the body and attacking it intelligently. And that's something that I trust Max Holloway to do 10 times out of 10. He will go for the body. If it's not there, he won't worry about it. He'll find ways to hit it still. He'll still sneak in body jabs. He'll still throw the odd kick to the body. He's always chipping away at the body, and he has a fucking iron chin. Now, the counter leg kicks, that could be an issue. I do not think raw leg kicks are going to be a problem for Max going into this. I think if Gaethje's going into it expecting to just be able to throw kicks like Yair did in his fight against Max Holloway and just freely blast a few to start the fight, I think he's crazy. Because Max Holloway has... he has a problem with getting low kicked in just a conceptual way. It's always going to end up happening in his fights where he eats a hard low kick at some point. You look at almost all of his fights. If someone sees the opportunity, they'll throw a really good leg kick on him and it'll work and then not work the entire rest of the fucking fight. Because he has really nice tactics to work around someone with a strong leg kicking game. In the Yair fight, he showed he's really good at just crashing the pocket and putting a big 1-2 in your face if you keep going for it, or you can even show a double leg if you're going to keep going to the well. Against Aldo, he fought with his leg in like a pretty much permanent, like half checked out, so that anytime he stepped in, he wasn't going to be stepping into a hard flush kick on the thigh. It'll kind of like ride up the knee or slide up the leg. Or if, you know, Aldo went low with it, it would hit directly on the calf. It didn't come up much in that fight because Aldo didn't really go for leg kicks by that point in his career, but it's still like an important factor. Max Holloway has shown reliably that even though he is leg kickable, he is not going to let you do it for free. And that's something that I think could be a bit of a 50-50 gambit of whether or not Gaethje's leg kicks can and huge power punches to the head can like add up before Max's really smart body attrition and like great use of high low feints can start getting him to like TKO positions. Because I'm not expecting Max Holloway to like completely spark out Justin Gaethje, but I definitely could see him like TKOing him in the way that we've seen Gaethje finished multiple times, where he gets hit really fucking hard and then they just kind of put it on him a little bit. Right, I guess the Eddie Alvarez fight, he just got kneed while being out on his feet and then died. But I could see it looking a lot like the Dustin fight, where the fight's generally going in Gaethje's way and he's having a lot of success, but he's slowly getting chipped away, and then Max finds one real fucking good shot. Because that's another factor, is the going forward versus going backwards battle, I think, is going to favor Max, because Max is a very, very good counterpuncher. He doesn't have the most power, but if you collide into him, he's one of the more lethal, like, single-shot counter guys in the sport in a weird way. Because everyone you watch in his fights that comes at him for a prolonged period of time, they get fucking buzzed. They normally get buzzed more than him.
Yeah, Dustin got dropped real hard in the first round of that fight because he just, like, rolled up on Max Holloway throwing a really obvious wide left hand.
Yeah, like, I don't think it got counted as a proper knockdown, but, like, he fucking hurt him. And Dustin said, like, Dustin said after, like, I was fucking hurt. Max just knocked out Korean Zombie. He fucking buzzed the shit out of Arnold Allen in the last, like, 5 seconds of their fight. The first time that Allen actually committed to just stepping in and trying to swing with Max, Max cracked him. It's every single time someone tries to check Max and be like, oh, are you really just down to fucking brawl if I come at you? He normally is. He's an incredibly sneaky counterpuncher. And someone like Gaethje has a great chin, but it's the type of chin that I think if a guy can just land a real sneaky shot on his temple, or just get a few quick, like, rib punches, or, I don't know, Max got nice elbows, you know, get his high guard up and just blast a huge elbow down the middle of it. Things like that could be the difference maker. Because Gaethje, the way that his style overall operates, it works well when it comes to patiently countering off the type of offense Max likes to go for, especially since Max is such an in and out fighter. He really likes to, you know, play with entry feints and timing and the rhythm on when he's going to enter. And Gaethje's normally fast enough and far away enough to where if you commit at the wrong time, you're going to get your leg chopped up, or you're going to eat a huge overhand, or he'll just put a jab in your face, something like that. So My pick is going to be Max Holloway by TKO in the fourth round. But the caveat of if I could go forward in time and you just tell me what the first round looks like, if Gaethje gets his jab off in the first round and gets it working, I think he wins by finish. I think he'll be the first guy to finish Max Holloway on the feet if he can get his jab going within the first two rounds. Because Max really doesn't like someone that can consistently time his entries with straight shots. He doesn't like someone that can stifle his entries with low kicks. And if Gaethje, you know, mostly sticks to inside low kicking, I think that would play to his advantage a lot, because kicking the outside of Max's leg, Max will still jolt in a nice little body jab that'll stab you, and he can take a lot of low kicks. So it's not like you just gotta, you know, eat a body jab real quick. I think Max can eat as many body jabs, or can eat as many low kicks as Gaethje can take body jabs before it takes a toll, you know?
So my gut pick when I heard this fight was made was what I imagine most people thought, which is, Max Holloway went up to lightweight and fought Dustin Poirier and kind of just was very competitive but got bullied in exchanges by a much bigger puncher. It seems like Max has made a more committed move to lightweight during this camp. I'm always dubious about how much that kind of thing actually makes a difference, and I feel like the style dynamic between him and a guy like Dustin Poirier kind of what it is regardless of what weight they fight as. Just, or maybe if he'd bulked up a little bit more, he wouldn't have gotten clinch stalled in the last round, but he still would have lost the fight, you know. Max Holloway is always a really hard fighter to read for me, because, like, I mean, he's one of the greatest fighters of all time. He's a true all-terrain striker who is classically at his best as like a fucking marauder, but has shown a tremendous amount of strategic adaptability in a lot of different matchups throughout his career. Has shown some really smart defensive performances in fights where he actually just decides to not fight like a dumbass, like the second Volkanovski fight. He had like so many ways of dealing with all of the things that lost him the first Volkanovski fight. But then he has stuff like the Yair fight or the Korean Zombie fight, where it seems like he's so sure that he's going to beat the guy that he gets into a kind of stupid war that he really doesn't need to, still eats a bunch of shots from Korean Zombie and just like gets his leg kicked up a bunch by Yair. But Max Holloway is just fine because he's fucking built different. But we've seen Max Holloway be able to fight with that avalanche of volume, the way he absolutely torched guys like Brian Ortega and Calvin Kattar. We've seen him have those much more like
kind of reserved outboxings, like the Korean Zombie fight attempted to be,
second Volk fight, and the Arnold Allen fight. Yeah, Korean Zombie just like made him throw down. He was like, "We're gonna have a war, and you're gonna fucking give me a warrior's death."
Yeah, I think in a way this fight actually prepared Max for Gaethje well, because if Gaethje comes at him like Korean Zombie did, I think Max might do him the same. Max is really dangerous if you keep coming at him, and he's going to beat you in the cardio battle if you keep exchanging with him. I think Gaethje should try and limit Max's offense.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Justin Gaethje doesn't really do that kind of shit anymore. Like you say, he's also had a sort of transformation into I wouldn't say reserved, but he's not the violence idiot that he once was.
Reserved relative to how he used to be.
Yeah, it's a pretty like meat and potatoes counterpunching game that's a lot of just like, I'm gonna fucking stand here and swing a huge bomb whenever you step in on me, and makes him look like a counterpunching god against like fucking shot Donald Cerrone and Tony Ferguson, and actually gave Dustin Poirier a lot of trouble leading up to the knockout in their second fight, because Dustin just kind of hates tracking people down and has a lot more success in that matchup when Justin Gaethje is the one pressing the issue. Max Holloway is like pretty counterable when he's forced to lead, and also when he's like getting chased out of the pocket on the end of exchanges.
And he's jabbable off the hand fight, notably from the Volkanovski fight.
And he has had fights where he kind of just lets people low kick him. All of these things kind of rough against Justin Gaethje, particularly just the dynamic that Justin Gaethje is a like pretty big lightweight who hits fucking hard and still has a crazy chin. I absolutely agree. If he can just like make Justin Gaethje shell up, overthrow and make Justin Gaethje miss and counter him, if he has ways of dealing with the low kicks, if he can really get to the body, I could see like, you know, either like a standing TKO or something that turns into something resembling the Calvin Kattar fight down the stretch.
Also, no one forget, Max is really good on top. If he hurts you and you fall, he's almost always finishes the person.
Got a great dash choke.
Yep, he's great at chokes. Don't really think you'd do it. I think at this point, Max Holloway has decided on honor. He will just never submit anyone ever again. Because he's had opportunities in his last, like in a few of his last fights, he just didn't. He
went for it against Korean Zombie. It's just even a basically unconscious Korean Zombie can still defend a dash choke real good. Still going to go in my gut, going to pick Justin Gaethje. I think he will be able to use the low kicks to like slow Max's roll and really just kick him out of being able to step in. It's going to be just jamming his entries. I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities to just hit Max back a lot fucking harder on the end of exchanges. Do just think he has a lot of the goods that Dustin Poirier used to just push Max Holloway out of a fight that he was nonetheless extremely competitive in.
Dustin doesn't take offense the same way that Gaethje does, though. I feel like you can really beat the shit out of Dustin and he'll still not be much more worse for wear. But Gaethje really shows attrition. And that's why I'm going to pick Max Holloway by later round finish. I'm saying fourth round because I feel like fifth round is just always such a pipe dream. But I don't know. Fifth round really could be it. Max Holloway, although having some of his most insane fights being ones where people talk about him being a pace bully that he just brings you out to deep waters. Normally deep waters is only like 3 and 4. Because normally that's enough of a barrage to beat the fucking shit out of you to where you're just inert by round 5. Like Ortega got taken out of the fight because he was so beaten up before the fifth round. And Calvin Kattar just was a shell of himself, and Max just taunted him for the most of the fifth round and like jabbed him a little. So a fight where it makes it that long, I think if it makes it that long, Max is having a bad time.
And he got clinched all by Dustin Poirier.
He did get clinched all by Dustin in the fifth round too. Like shit like that happens. Max normally isn't even that good in the fifth round. He's more of like a middle fight guy. First round, he'll like set his weapons up, and then the second, third round, third and fourth, he'll come at you. And then the fifth, if he's up, he'll take some time off.
I mean, he was still stomping Kattar and Ortega in the first couple of rounds. As hard.
Yeah, something that Gaethje probably won't like is the long kicks, if Max decides to go to the well with those a lot. He should. I think kicking is probably his most consistent way to shut down low kicks. Oh, and Max loves having a light lead leg. He likes playing around.
Oh, that is something that I wanted to mention. Is there any chance that you think we get some combination of like modern Justin Gaethje bringing out like Arnold Allen fight Max Holloway, and this is actually kind of a mid-paced chess match?
I think there is a good chance the fight is not fight of the night, but I think it's going to be really fucking interesting.
Oh, I think it's going to be a great fight. It's just, do you think that dynamic could lead to a fight where this maybe isn't the insane blood and guts war that everyone just assumes it's going to be because it's these guys?
I haven't even been expecting it. I've been mostly expecting them to have like a chess battle that maybe it'll go really fucking fast. Like maybe they'll start fucking killing each other. But really, if Max hurts Gaethje first, then I think it's just all downhill for Gaethje by that point. But if Gaethje can hurt Max like 2 or 3 times, then I think it's just going to keep compounding itself. I think the fight is mostly won by whoever is winning early. And that's a big difficulty for Max in it, because I think that Max is a lot less of a first round warrior than Gaethje is. Because Gaethje, he'll bring out his biggest weapons like right off the bat. Max normally likes to kind of hold his best shit for once he's figured you out.
Okay, so I guess let's just move on. Still got a whole bunch of crazy shit to get through. I mean, Charles Oliveira is fighting Armin Sarukian. Let's give Armin Sarukian credit before we both pick Charles Oliveira by knockout easily. a dynamic that I have to see play out in literally every fight where Charles Oliveira fights someone who can wrestle is he just going to like not even try to stop the first takedown and just like test his guard and see if there's anything going on there? And when it turns out that that was a stupid idea that he shouldn't have done, has he just like let the fight slip away from him? You know, this is what happened in the Islam Makhachev fight. He just didn't even fight the first takedown.
And by the time he did get up, he had already been getting hit for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, got absolutely smushed and just conceded all the initiative, then started getting really annoyed and tried to out-hoss Islam in the clinch and just got thrown around, and suddenly found himself having to keep the fight at a range and directionality that sort of really slows Charles Oliveira's like signature pressure, because he's a guy who has to like feel like he can just beat the fuck out of you wherever the fight goes. And if like in the Islam fight, he's like, okay, I've got to like just be kickboxing, but also still be coming forward and pressuring and not be overthrowing into clinch exchanges. That is a big thing, is that if he's losing the clinch exchanges, it becomes a lot harder for him to come forward and be prepared for what happens when two people collide. Also, a big part of that fight was the fact that Islam Makhachev is actually like a really fucking good counterpuncher now. Armin Sarukian's got a couple of, you know, he's got like a hair trigger left hook that he can do. It's not really a comfortable counterpuncher. Generally, when people come at him, he gets pushed back.
He's actually not that hard to just show a punch against and get him to take like 2.5 steps back. Charles likes to, you know, just step in with a big front kick, which would probably get Sarukian over to the fence.
Yeah. So, despite the fact that this is obviously not an easy fight for Charles, Armin Sarukian is a really well-rounded, dangerous fighter.
It's 27 while Max is, or while Charles is 34.
I just, it's still hard for me to see many people at lightweight being ready to deal with the level of violence that Charles Oliveira brings to you in a first round. Like, you've really got to be committed to standing your ground, hitting him with good counters. You've got to have the goods to win those tie-ups. You've got to take any opportunities to get on top of him and just let him play his guard like a dumb idiot. You've got to take him out of his fight. I'd see Armin Sarukian having some of that. Like, he's going to get a takedown on Charles and work him from top for a little bit. It's just like, it's a question of, does the fight slip away from Charles Oliveira, or does he simply decide to stand up and knock Armin Sarukian the fuck out?
I think if Charles loses, it'll be him eating a huge shot as he's reaching for a collar tie and then getting arm triangled. But for the majority of the fight, I'm expecting Charles to have a pretty easy time pushing Sarukian back, or at least stopping himself from going backwards. And whoever goes backwards for any prolonged stretch of time in this fight, I think is going to get finished within a round. Maybe 2 rounds.
I don't see Armin Sarukian being prepared to push Charles Oliveira back. It's really fucking hard to do.
The fight is a little bit the Kevin Lee fight.
Little bit. Armin Sarukian, he resets too much because he still has to think way too much when he's striking. He wants to get back to range and mostly be a, like, throw a big body kick and then spin through into a spinning back fist guy. Yeah, he knocked out Beneil Dariush because he was 10 times faster than him, and it was a nice shot off of, like, the right hand off of the clinch knee. It was pretty nice.
That was a nice shot. Like, not the type of thing I would expect Charles to get caught by.
Yeah, because Beneil Dariush was also just constantly resetting and letting Armin Sarukian like select what combination he wanted to try out next.
And he has bad vision for seeing someone just fucking throwing something real fast off a kick.
Yeah, I don't know. Just seeing Armin Sarukian just like, you know, hanging around on the feet with Joaquin Silva because he got an absolute layup and he wanted to like get a highlight reel, and then just like getting nearly knocked the fuck out with a left hand because Joaquin Silva just decided to come forward and throw bombs.
I think the place Sarukian has the most upside is probably just being in guard, because his ground and pound's really fucking hard, and it doesn't seem like he even has to try to put much on it. He just throws it and it automatically has a good amount of stank on it. His his finish against Dariush didn't impress me. It was the ground and pound shots on Dariush laying on the ground that were impressive to me. Because it was, one of them was the hardest punch I think I've ever seen someone eat on the chin while on the ground. He fucking, it looked like his hand clipped through his face for a second. Like, with the frame rate. So, that could be dangerous for Charles, because Charles is pretty hittable if you just commit, full hog to hitting him while you're in his guard. Especially if you're someone that can just keep getting out of it over and over. Because Charles will put you in some sticky situations, but if you can get yourself out of it, then it's a lot more dangerous.
He's not going to fucking triangle arm and
Tsurukin. I doubt he's going to triangle arm and Tsurukin. I think that the most success he would have with grappling is maybe hurting Tsurukin and choking him, or getting the back and just hanging out there a long time, whittling him down. I could see maybe Charles getting a sub if it goes late into the third. But I'm going to pick Charles by second round knockout, because
I'm going to pick Charles by first round knockout.
That is entirely fair. I'm saying second round because Charles likes to kind of beat someone up a little bit and just come at them full blast from the first 10 seconds of the next round. Kind of like the Chandler fight.
Like literally every fight he's had in the last five
years.
Yeah,
yeah. That's just the one where he knocked the guy out because he comes at you hard from the beginning of the round. Normally he just starts winning soon. So I think that it's just going to add up to a knockout. Because Tsurukin likes to drop into knees a lot. He doesn't run into knees typically, but he likes to drop his level in a way that seems like it's just free knees for Charles. And he also ducks out of clinches in a way that is liable to get you kneed. He pulls out of the way of punches in a way that is liable to give Charles a really good body lock entry to at least safely enter and get into the clinch. So just many things that Tsurukin does funnel me as someone incredibly biased towards picking Charles super confidently.
Yeah, me also as someone incredibly biased. I do not like Armin Tsurukin's really exaggerated defensive reactions that he will commit to on the back foot that put him in some real bad positions against someone whose whole thing is just rolling up on you and forcing you to exit range in a way that puts your feet in bad positions so he can hit you real fucking hard. Charles just has, even though his eyes were fucked or whatever, he has great eyes for doing that kind of thing specifically. And he's really keyed into it from the first second of the fight. But I think the fight is winnable for Armin if he can just be there to create the clinch exchanges off of the collisions, not just let Charles chase him around beating the fuck out of him, and use that to just repeatedly get Charles in his guard and just keep him there and punch him in the head repeatedly.
If I was Charles, I'd be probably going for snapdowns, because I think Tsurukin's going to duck into the clinch a lot and give him a bunch of opportunities to get collar ties, and then maybe try and catch Charles' knees to follow through on a takedown, because if you've got the goods for it, that's a pretty easy avenue to get Charles on his back, is just to time one of his body knees. And if you're a good enough defensive grappler, then the guillotine threat isn't too much of a worry. I think that would probably be the most consistent way for Islam to try and game plan to beat Charles, is just clinch with him and wait for Charles to go on one leg for you. Because he always will. And that's... it's very reliable that you can just find a situation where Charles is on one leg to hit him, or try and pull his leg out from under him. But I don't know. I think if they end up clinching reliably, it's just Tsurukin getting his ass beaten, or uppercut, left hooked. The
knees to the body from front headlock.
Yeah, the knees to the body, the front headlock, the right straight as you're trying to run out of the clinch. He just has so many weapons within that range, no matter whether you go one direction or the other, that it just seems so difficult of an ask for me to pick someone that is whose best win is Benil Dariush. You know, it's hard for me to pick a guy whose best win has been able to just beat Charles outright. If Armin Tsurukin beats Charles, though, keep in mind I'm picking him every fight ever again.
Yeah, I could see this guy really fucking rising to the occasion.
I could see it. It is a matchup that affords someone like Tsurukin with a lot of momentum to just have a really nice coming out party where he fucking has the first fight where he commits to pressure.
But still, this podcast rides for Chucky Olives. So, I mean, what the fuck did you think we were going to say?
Yeah, Charles by second round up knee. Not an up elbow, not a flying knee, an up knee.
Okay, so Bo Nickel's fighting Cody Brundage. Don't know why the fuck this is on the main card. Sure, Bo Nickel's going to be good. I just fucking hate Bo Nickel. I can't stand him, how he's constantly like, oh yeah, I think Israel Adesanya's trash. I think I'd beat him easily. And it's like, I know Bo Nickel's pretty inexperienced, but generally the UFC will, like, when people talk about the UFC protecting fighters, I think 9 times out of 10, it's just like their management actually picking out good fights for them. I don't think the UFC really gives a shit. And I think if Bo Nickel's management were pushing for, like, you know, a Brad Tavares fight to just get him straight in there with, like, actual ranked guys, they'd do it. But no, Bo Nickel's fighting Cody Brundage. You know, his other two wins in the UFC are Jamie Pickett and Val Woodburn. Yeah, beat him easily. Some of the canniest cans that he could be fighting. Yeah, I'm sure Bo Nickel's going to be good. Just really do not understand the decision to put this on a pay-per-view main card, except for the fact
with Jiří versus Rakic as the fight right below.
As with fucking Aljamain Sterling versus Calvin Kattar on a prelim.
Even Fig Cody could have been first fight on the main card.
Yeah, honestly, like, this should be cut and jerker material, to be honest. But, you know, there's a Bo Nickel hype train. And they do quite often like to do this, where they put someone, like, kind of coming up and potentially not actually that good just in the middle of a pay-per-view main card with a dramatically better fight at the top of the prelims. Bo Nickel's going to win easily. That's all I have to say.
Probably by knockout?
Or submission, or both. Probably going to do whatever.
I'm going to say he's just going to speed bully him. Because, you know, he's like a real athlete fighting Cody Brundage.
He's just going to every athletic attribute bully Cody Brundage.
So in better fights, Jiří Prochazka is fighting Alexander Rakic.
I think Jiří Prochazka is going to chase Alexander Rakic around, hitting him with really fucking goofy punches. Rakic is too passive and not really a notable counter threat and really fucking skittish on the back foot. And Jiří, we have no reason to believe that he's not just still a fucking lunatic who will go at someone hog wild. He actually, like, will low kick okay. Rakic is real fucking low kickable. And just people who commit to blitzes against Rakic will just force him to, like, I honestly think it might be a consistent way to TKO Rakic by just blitzing at him and making him hop backwards with all his weight onto his back leg at, like, a horrible fucking angle that just makes his leg fall off. He is an okay top player, but I mean, Jiri's, like, squirmy and annoying on the ground. I'm going to pick Jiří by, like...
I think that it's a really difficult fight for Jiří, and that he's not going to be allowed to look as cool as he normally tries to look. Because Rakic is a neutralizer in that way, where if there's, like, fun to be had in the matchup, he's going to do his absolute best to stop that. It sounds like I'm just insulting Rakic.
I'm sure it sounded like I was just insulting Rakic.
Yeah, and I am.
Yeah, me too. But,
like, he's a good fighter. I think that he actually offers a lot that that we haven't seen Jiří have to deal with in the UFC. But I just can't get over seeing how many times I've seen Rakic just fucking, like, turn his head completely away if someone steps in real deep with a 1-2. And Jiří likes to throw a 1-2 into a spinning elbow, or, like, what, 1-2 into whatever the fuck.
Flying knee.
He likes to start a lot of his combinations just by, or sequences just by showing a 1-2 to get into range. So I think that Prochazka is just going to have a lot of the control of when exchanges happen. And Rakic isn't insistent enough on pressure to enforce Prochazka going backwards like he probably needs Prochazka to be going for him to have any reliable success on the feet. So I'm going to pick Prochazka by second round submission.
Okay, fair. Fucking Aljamain Sterling going up to featherweight fighting Calvin Kattar. I still can't figure out if this fight is supposed to be Aljamain Sterling's management trying to set him up for like the most, like the highest ranked fight at featherweight that he might be able to win, or if this is the UFC being like, "Oh, you got to move up to featherweight and you're a grappler. Well, just fight this absolute fucking monolith who's just a fucking brick and is really fucking hard to wrestle and is like a huge puncher and a pretty good boxer who has a ton of height and reach on you." Again, going with my gut pick, I was like, that is fucking yikes for Aljo. But I don't know, we haven't really seen Calvin Kattar against a fantastic back take artist. I guess he fought Moicano, but just got like low kicked and jabbed to death. I mean, grappling didn't really enter into the equation because Moicano was just like winning on the feet the whole time. He has enough in common with like Pedro Munhoz that I can see Aljamain Sterling having some success running that kind of game plan where, you know, his footwork is pretty inefficient and a lot of like really exaggerated moves. You know, he's the funk master. But he's comfortable like moving his feet and throwing long jabs and a good variety of kicks. If someone's just like a plodding, dangerous violence machine who just wants to get into an exchange where he can knock you the fuck out, but will let you just like throw stuff at his guard and he'll just wait his turn and follow you around. Yeah, that's kind of Calvin Kattar. It's just the fact that Aljamain Sterling really relied on kind of being a lank bully at 135.
Despite not actually having that lanky of a frame, like he's 5'8 or 5'7 at 135. That's like the average height. He just has kind of long arms.
Yeah, but we saw against Sean O'Malley when he was actually confronted with a dramatic range disadvantage. He really, I mean, you know, part of it is that Sean O'Malley has good footwork and is a good counterpuncher and all of this stuff, but he fucking hated like not being able to keep himself at a range that could be used as defense in of itself.
Well, also, do you know how many times I've seen Aljamain Sterling his feet and upper body in a position that Calvin Kattar has just knocked someone clean out with? Like I've definitely seen Aljo in the position that Kattar knocked out Ricardo Ramos in, and I've also seen him in the exact position that Shane Burgos got uppercutted in. I've also seen him clash into the pocket and get punched by a right straight in the same way that Calvin Kattar elbowed Jeremy Stephens. I think it's a poisonous matchup for Aljamain Sterling. And I think that, like you said, I think it is a UFC knowing that it's a bad matchup for Sterling thing. Because, you know, someone's camp is going to think their guy has a good matchup against everyone. So they'll take the fight. But
credit to Sterling for taking a fight like this. Guy's obviously got huge nuts. I mean, he wanted to fight Max Holloway.
Yeah, I think it's a poisonous matchup for him. But I'm actually not sure if I'm going to pick Kattar or not, because
yeah, Calvin Kattar might also be shot.
I'm not as worried about that as I am about he's coming off knee surgery and a guy who's going to be doing a lot of like side to side direction changes and trying to take the back off of making him overextend with his hooks. Fucking, if there's one thing Calvin Kattar loves doing, it's overextending with a huge punch that misses. It's like his favorite pastime. And Aljamain Sterling can hit a slick back take on some of the fastest 135ers ever. So, like, Calvin Kattar just giving up his back could be enough to get Aljo, you know, like, a round banked on. Also, the fact that Kattar isn't the best finisher against, despite his name. But they're not in Boston right now, so. Or they're not going to be fighting in Boston, so he's going to have problems.
Also, he was called that when he was just like
decisioning people.
Yeah. Started knocking people out after he got to the UFC. I can see the path to victory for Aljamain Sterling in this fight. It's just one of those things where it feels like a perfect performance fight, you know? It feels like something where he's going to be on a razor's edge the whole time because he's got to keep Calvin Kattar off of him while outlanding him with his, technical deficiencies in his footwork. I just, at some point he's going to have to try and get some respect off of Calvin Kattar, and I think that's just going to get him like intercepting right straight as he steps in real hard KO'd.
Where I'm at on it is I think that I've seen Aljamain Sterling win I've seen Aljamain Sterling win awful matchups similarly, or like similarly awful matchups, and like win pretty comfortably. And I, despite thinking that Calvin Kattar wins this matchup like 90% of the time in theory,
three rounder is good for Aljo too.
Three rounder is good for Aljo. I just haven't seen Kattar beat this type of matchup of a guy that's just going to try and like Formiga him and get the back once in a round, just keep it. Kattar's really good at defending that, but I haven't seen him do that against anyone as good as Aljo, or even seen him do it at all. The closest was his fight against Zabit, and Zabit just outboxed him the whole fight, or most of the fight.
Well, I pretty much trust Calvin Kattar to not get rear naked choked. Do I trust him to do anything to win the round if he gets his back taken early? No.
And do you trust him to like not just get himself taken down more easily in the next round if he just spent a whole round getting backpacked? Because if...
No, I'd probably expect him to overthrow a left hook that makes him do a backflip and gives his back.
I think if Aljo gets the back once, the fight's still winnable for Kattar, but if Kattar doesn't get out of it by the end of the round, then I think that he's just set himself up to be behind and it's playing into Aljo's hand enough to where Aljo can just keep getting that one nice back take. Because it sounds like it's not that reliable, but for Aljo, it seems to be. I mean, every time I think that he's not going to be able to just teleport to the back in a fight, he does it. So I'm going to pick Aljamain by decision, even though I so desperately want to pick Calvin Kattar by knockout.
Yeah, I am going to pick Calvin Kattar by, like, first, second round-ish knockout.
It's all I can see in my head, but also I don't get what I want, so Aljamain Sterling is probably going to win by wide decision.
I think if there's going to be anything good to come out of this fight, it's going to be Aljo's physique on the scale. Someone get some oil ready for that, because boy is looking jacked.
And then we got Holly Holm fighting Kayla Harrison.
I don't give a shit about this fight, do you?
I do. I care about the result. I don't think the fight's going to be very good, but Holly Holm is pretty much just fighting Ronda Rousey again, but she's gotten so much worse since then, and this Ronda Rousey's bigger and probably better overall as an MMA fighter, so it's just really awkward. I don't even think Kayla Harrison's ever made 135 before, so that's going to be strange. She was, I believe, the 155 champion in PFL. And Holly Holm has fought at 145, so I don't really know why they didn't do this fight at featherweight, but whatever. I think Holly Holm, if she can turn back time for a day, she'll outfight and easily win, but more likely she just gets head and arm thrown and then fucking strangled.
I'm going to pick it to be a shitty split decision that is decided entirely by inert clinch stalling. I'm going to say Holly Holm wins the split decision that she probably doesn't deserve to. Anyway, Diego Lopez is fighting Sadiq Youssef. Sadiq Youssef is kind of susceptible to just go up and kill the guy strats.
They're setting him up to lose because Sadiq is the best guy that Diego Lopez could make look like shit. That's my take. I think it's a hard fight for both guys.
I'm going to pick Sadiq Youssef because he never actually just gets run over when someone goes at him real hard. And he's got some pretty nice counters and he's good at jiu-jitsu.
And Diego Lopez is so fucking hittable. It's crazy.
Yeah, it just doesn't even enter his mind. He's a maniac. He's like, he's awesome. Absolute fucking must-see TV. I get why people are really like excited about him. I don't necessarily get why people like think he's going to be the next big thing and think he's going to be a crazy action fighter who's... yeah, he's just one of these like jungle fight guys. He's just a weird athletic dude whose entire game is built up of finishing moves to deal with all of the other weird athletic dudes that you're going to have to fight on short notice on the Brazilian regional scene.
Yeah, he also did a lot of combat jiu-jitsu, This isn't analysis. It's just funny that Diego Lopez like has a loss by armbar to Nathan Orchard.
Nathan Orchard's pretty good at armbarring people.
Pretty good armbarring people. It's just funny that they fought in combat jiu-jitsu. His base is actually more elite in combat jiu-jitsu than it is for his MMA experience pre-UFC. Because he kind of didn't fight anyone before he got to the UFC. Or for the most part. Ioannis and Brito's okay.
Sorry, you also picking Sadiq Youssef?
I'm picking Diego Lopez because...
Oh, good. We can't both pick Sadiq Youssef. We're still gonna look like
it's just momentum. Like, Diego Lopez is a guy that the UFC is obviously trying to build. They had him wearing fucking a Spartan outfit at UFC 300. Or like, for an ad. So... I think the UFC probably like dosed Sadiq Youssef, or like they're gonna poison him or something. He's gonna come out looking like a shell of himself and just get knocked out by a jab. So my pick is that the fight's rigged. We got Jalen Turner fighting Renato Moicano. This fight, kind of Calvin Kattar versus Aljamain Sterling, but it's a lot closer, I think.
I really want to pick Moicano because I think he can do a lot of what Dan Hooker did, while also. Having the grappling threat, you know, he's not like a huge lightweight, but he's going to be able to like jab Jalen Turner at his own range. Moicano, he's a good counterpuncher, and he likes to extend the exchanges and chase people out of the pocket when he lands counters. Jalen Turner kind of likes to watch his work a little bit because he's fucking gigantic and just gets to... like come up with all the cool moves that he wants to do at a range that most people just can't hit him. And Dan Hooker was like, well, I'm just going to eat the shots and fucking jab you real hard and then like run at you throwing bombs. And it went in the fight. Moicano also hangs his chin when he is leading and can just like get his jab countered real hard by a big 1-2 when he's trying to get exchanges going. And Jalen Turner hits real fucking hard, and he's a good finisher. So I really want to pick the Moik by like chase Jalen Turner around, hitting him with big right hands, and then rear naked choke him. But
I think there's just no chance Turner doesn't fight back really hard.
Yeah.
So what's your pick?
Oh, I'm probably going to pick Jalen Turner by KO. Do you want to talk about it a little bit?
I'm going to pick... it's like I want to pick Turner because it's just... It seems really free in my head, but I...
Certainly the gut pick, right?
Yeah, I know better than that, so I'm going to like respect Moicano enough to pick him on merit of he should be able to win if he fights a good fight, because he often does fight a good fight. And the Dober fight was kind of similar, like a completely different frame, but they're both southpaws and they both like the same weapons. And Moicano, I feel like, is more likely to get fucking blown through by a dude that's kind of like a short buzzsaw than he is a guy that's very lanky that he can kind of have a range distance battle with. Because also, Turner's pretty leg kickable and Moicano's got really good counter kicks. So he could probably like fuck up Jalen Turner's... like boxing offense. Well, honestly, he could do similar things to what he did to Calvin Kattar in this fight. It would just be much harder to do. I think the back take is very important, but he might just be able to like get top side control on Turner. Turner's shown some grappling vulnerability against Gamrot, even though, you know, arguably won, whatever.
Yeah, Moicano's just way more dangerous when he gets a good position on you than Gamrot is.
He is. Yeah, I'm gonna say Moicano by being a fucking dog and like getting a takedown in the second round after getting his ass beat a bit in the first.
Yeah, and we always want to get the money Moicano, you know? Okay, Jessica Andrade fighting Marina Rodriguez.
Emrod's going to knock her out, right?
Yeah. Well, you also got to pick clinch knee, because Jessica Andrade always punches into the clinch and relies on just being a hoss there, but quite often gets outskilled in the clinch. And Marina Rodriguez is a huge and loves pulling people who are shorter than her down into knees.
She does. I think that clinch knees will play a part, But Marina Rodriguez also has a pretty good 1-2. So just like a nice 1-2 counter. Similar to how Andrade has been knocked out twice now. Just a big counter right is something she does not like dealing with. And her fight against Mackenzie Dern was her turning back time a little bit, but I still think that she's past it in a weird mental way. She's kind of Garbranted because they're the same age, and they have an issue where they're just super fucking mark for the same setup and shot against really anyone that decides to go for it. It's just a dangerous gambit because, you know, hits really fucking hard, so it's hard to just keep going for that, but...
Yeah, and kind Rodriguez, of honestly, how was Mackenzie Dern supposed to beat Jessica Andrade?
Pretty much, yeah. That's a big aspect. Like, she may have won her last fight, but I feel like you'd have to probably shoot her in the face a few times before she loses to Mackenzie Dern.
Yeah, there's shot, and then there's, like, literally shot with a gun.
Yeah, like, she has to be shot with a gun to lose, yeah. I'm thinking Marina Rodriguez by counter right straight, but Andrade is so fucking strong that she might remind us why Marina Rodriguez is kind of known as being bad at grappling.
I mean, she's bad at wrestling. She's kind of fine on the ground.
She's good at jiu-jitsu, yeah. But I think it could be an example of showing someone that is able to beat a really good grappler, Mackenzie Dern, while actually grappling with them some, could just lose to someone that was enough of a tank to fucking... just toss Dern off of her if she needed to. Because, you know, I wouldn't be that surprised if Rodriguez got slammed a couple times, even if she wins.
No. Yeah, still picking Rodriguez by, like, KO in probably not the first round, because she is a slow starter.
Her being a slow starter is kind of why I think she's going to win the first round, because Andrade is better at getting knocked out early than she is at starting fast. So like she could just make Marina start faster than she wants to and crack her.
Okay, Bobby Green's fighting Jim Miller. Bobby Green's a poisonous matchup for Jim Miller if he's not just like absolutely cooked from getting like hideously KO'd by Jalen Turner. One of the worst late stoppages I've ever seen. Against Jalen Turner. Doesn't even feel like that was that long ago.
Well, also, Bobby Green's the young man in this fight. He's 37 fighting a 40-year-old. Bobby is really good from both stances, and Jim Miller is dyed-in-the-wool, a southpaw that's going to get jabbed from someone in either stance.
Yeah, and Bobby Green's a really good defensive wrestler.
Really good defensive wrestler. Probably going to get taken down and give up some bad positions because it's not a Bobby Green fight unless he... does something that he doesn't have to, but he wants to because he's silly. I'll
tell you one thing. Jim Miller's going to win the first round. Bobby Green's going to win the third round. And Bobby Green is the lose a split decision king. So...
this is a good chance. He could actually just... it could just be a classic Bobby Green fight where he had like a few months where he got to be a guy people thought of as elite. Or like almost elite. And then... he lost to Jalen Turner, and now he's back to being the guy that decisions Jim Miller and has a 50-50 toss-up with.
Yeah, going to pick Bobby Green by decision, though.
I'm going to say Bobby Green finish, because Miller wears down really bad.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. I mean, Miller tends to fade out of fights, and Bobby Green's been smoking fools lately. He's been actually like putting mustard on his shots.
Goes a lot harder, and he likes to just step in on southpaws that aren't used to being stepped in on. And he's less check hookable than he is, like, jab into a left hookable. You know what I mean? I don't feel like the shot selection Jim Miller normally prefers to disincentivize someone coming at him is the type of thing that actually disincentivizes someone as good as Bobby Green.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby Green basically got knocked out in the same way by Drew Dober as how Jim Miller knocked out.
Yeah.
What was that guy's name? Jesse Butler. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, very similar level of fighter.
Yeah, so. I'm going to say Bobby Green is slightly harder to get that kind of position on than Jesse Butler is. And he's probably just going to jab Jim Miller up with both of his hands. Jesus Christ. Cody Garbrandt's going to get knocked out by Davison Figueiredo. Or the fight might be bad.
Yeah, or Cody's going to fucking look amazing because he isn't given enough time to look bad, and he could win because Fig's chin is kind of still a question at 135. He took big shots from Font, but just the way that Garbrandt can like blindside someone's speed makes me worry for someone that's been having problems seeing straight shots coming for a little while. Then again, Cody Garbrandt doesn't throw straight shots.
No, and Cody, you know, he can fucking knock out anyone who he lands a good shot on. But if it's not like an old Brian Kelleher daring him to knock them out, he's just so timid about getting into exchanges now and will panic himself into some real bad positions. I took a lot of positives away from Davison Figueiredo's fight with Rob Font. I heard people saying that he looked bad technically, and I'm like, yeah, he looked bad technically when he was in his prime. Just he was a lunatic who like believed in himself, and he would just come forward and just hit people back with like way more dynamic offense. And I thought he was just going to get smoked in that fight because I just thought he was going to get Marlon Marais. Thought he was at that stage in his career, and he showed pretty much all of the positive signs that you would want to see from someone moving up in weight late in their career. Looked fast, still like his power still translated. Seemed like he could take a better shot. Seemed like he could see shots coming better. I'm not convinced that Cody Garbrandt is back.
Oh, I don't think he's back at all. I just think that he's always been matchup dependent, just got bad matchups consecutively. And I think that's compounded the fact that his chin's regressed a little bit, because he's never had like an insane chin, but his chin's definitely gotten worse.
So you picking Cody?
Oh, God, no. Dear God, no. I'm picking Davison Figueiredo by stepping right straight, probably in the first round. Or just throwing a left hook at the same time Cody throws a left hook. Because Cody will try and pivot it, but the pivot will just put his feet in bad position to eat a left hook, while Figueiredo is completely fucking sideways to Garbrandt and just lands the punch anyways and still knocks him out because he can take a shot and Cody can't. Something like that. I feel like no matter what the knockout looks like, it'll probably be Figueiredo with his feet in bad position, with Garbrandt having his feet in good position against most people. But because of the context of the matchup, it'll actually be the exact opposite.
Okay, that's all the fights. I mean, what a fucking card. Should be a great night. We'll be back next week to talk about it and probably not talk about the next Apex card, because I'm sure there's going to be a ton of extremely meaningful results as well as just like stupid violent shit. Should be a good one. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Later.